Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Did you know I can perform all known mating dances, including that of the North American nerd, which involves a Scarlet Witch costume, a Comic-Con lanyard, and a tub of buttered popcorn?
I thought it would involve a Zatanna costume.
No, not enough geeks know what that is.
Well, then I feel bad for them because Zatanna has the sexiest costume in comics.
Well, it depends on who draws her, too.
Well, yeah, but...
You gotta admit, there's more George Perez Scarlet Witch pictures out there. Next to him when he used to draw Susan Storm in the... or John Byrne when he drew Susan Storm as what did he call her when she went nuts from the hate monger?
Oh, I don't remember. I just remember that story being really.
It was really, but it was her costume that everybody was like, really.
And then she got the 90s costume, which had four cut out so you could, you know, you had a boob window. Yeah, and thigh-high boots and all this other stuff. And it's like, dude, she's a mom.
Hey. Have you totally... boy. I'm married to a mom. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, and I don't see your wife going out, wandering around her job with thigh-high boots, a boob window, and a swimsuit. You know, showing the Baywatch swimsuit thing going.
Well,
she's smart. She's smart. She dresses
like
a human.
She's working at home now, so you really don't know how she's dressing.
That's why I said around the office.
Well, she has her office. Matter of fact, I am sitting right now in what used to be the craze room, but now is pretty much her office.
Oh,
and you can tell because I
snuck in.
Sitting
she must not
in
be there.
A brand new chair. It is an S-Racer gaming chair that she bought off the Amazons because the chair she was sitting in was hurting her back. And so she figured, you know what? I need an office chair. And rather than sneak downtown and take the one from work, because she occasionally does have to go downtown to work, she just bought herself a new one. And she's enjoying the heck out of it. Now I'm sitting in it, too. So if I nod off and just kind of start going to sleep, well, probably not. There's too much lumbar support. And my lumbar is going, yeah, you haven't really pressed against me this way.
I bought a new chair when I was working from home, an Amazon chair. Had to put it together. Which was interesting because it came. The cool thing was it kind of came in a flat box, and I was like, "Well, that's weird." And then I opened it up, and it was just parts. And they didn't even give the instructions. You had to go online to get the instructions to put it together. So, but I've had a new chair for a year now. I have been working from home for a year, and every so often they ask, "Well, do you want to come in the office?" And no, I don't.
Oh, no. Oh, thanks.
So I had a lot of this weekend off, Joe. So, you know what I did?
Let's see. Laundry, cooking for a week. You probably caught up on a few wrestling shows, maybe watched some documentaries. And see, you don't think I follow you on Facebook, but I do.
You know what else I watched?
What is that?
There's one of the streaming services called Shudder, which is, you know, all horror. And they had a special deal on it on if you're with T-Mobile, they give you free stuff every Tuesday, and they gave a free month of Shudder, and I liked it because it has Joe Bob Briggs, The Last Drive-In, where you got Joe Bob Briggs introducing and telling stories about crappy horror movies. So I watched Castle Freak, and he told the story of how the producer created the poster. And then went to a filmmaker and said, yeah, we need you to make this movie that I've already advertised and sold in these countries. And to this was back when there was VHS. I've already sold it to home video in all these countries. So you need to make a movie called Castle Freak. And the director writer said, well, what's it about? And he says, well, I don't know. It just needs to be in a castle and there's got to be a freak. Been a long time since I've been able to watch Joe Bob Briggs the way he reviews movies. It's got four dead bodies, six breasts, two kung fu, chain fu, ceiling fu, roof fu. Joe Bob says, check it out. There is no better way to watch a crappy movie than having someone who knows a little about it tell you about it. And I also read a bunch of comics, and I was thinking that there's no better way for people to enjoy comics than for us to tell them a little about them. Usually comics that they have not read.
Well, how about if we go first? You finally did see Godzilla versus Kong.
Yes. And as
how about
Joe
if you
Bob
do
Briggs
a mini review
say,
of that? Yeah, yeah.
As Joe Bob Briggs would say, too much plot getting in the way of the story.
You never did see the original Godzilla, did you?
Yes. I have the Criterion Godzilla set. The original Godzilla
well, then
had
you,
tons
you,
of plot.
Would you say that about that?
No, because that was
Lord
a serious
knows
movie.
When I was watching it, and I did after I watched Godzilla Kong, all I could think of was, wow, this is a lot of humanoids talking about Godzilla when all we're waiting for is Godzilla to show up.
Well, first off, Kong watches a lot of pro wrestling.
He does. He also can sign, apparently.
He was using drop kicks. He was using German suplexes.
He must. You forget way back once upon a time when they were doing Shrek and they were like, we need to figure out how Shrek is going to battle all these knights. How is this going to happen? We can't have him hurting these guys. Wait a minute. WWF wrestling, of course. So ever since then, anytime you want to see it, besides Godzilla's been known to deliver a few decent drop kicks in his older movies.
Yes, except they're not as realistic as Kong's were.
Very realistic because they were done. They weren't done with this fancy CGI you young kids have. This was the old-fashioned man and they even had a tag team with someone who I would have sworn was Ultraman, but I don't think it was.
You've seen the Mystery Science Theater 3000 opening where basically Godzilla is in the dropkick position and just goes across the screen for like 7-8 seconds, and it's really clear that they just put the suit on strings and moved it across. Back when they had no money for the Godzilla movies. For a serious review.
The only other problem, I
did not see the previous Godzilla movie. I did see Kong Skull Island. So I came into it knowing most of the story. And they had the little girl there to Millie Bobby Brown to explain that Godzilla is friend to all mankind now. But that changed.
See, this is a case where if you'd seen the previous movie, you would know, first of all, Godzilla basically is king of the monsters. At the end of the movie, after Godzilla blew the living shit out of King Ghidorah, the other monsters, basically, and after leveling Philadelphia, which can or cannot be a good thing. I haven't decided.
They just
all the other monsters ECW essentially
arena.
Came and laid down, basically kneeled in front of Godzilla. The teaser scene was, of course, the bad guys, the Echo terrorists, were had a piece of Ghidorah's head, which you later see in the Kong movie. Or the Godzilla Kong movie. The other thing that it makes more interesting, because during the little Easter egg that they threw out was when, and this was really the disappointing thing, because we see maybe five monsters in Godzilla King of the Monsters, even though they say there's about 17 of them on the loose. We only get to see five, including two we previously seen, and I think a giant spider. The other thing that the Easter egg is, and it didn't make sense until you start watching Kong, or the new movie, is they make a quick brief as they're trying to talk about all these monsters breaking loose, because basically the eco-terrorists get a hold of something created by the little girl's mom that allows them to make everybody go crazy. Mothra was in it too. You missed Mothra. You see what you missed by skipping a movie? And the comment they make is Kong is still contained on Skull Island, which I thought was interesting, because you're thinking from Kong, you're like, well, yeah, he's on Kong Island. He's not going anywhere. Then when you get to Godzilla versus Kong, that suddenly makes sense. Kong is literally contained, because as it gets said by the, I can't remember the actress name, the one who is pro Kong. I mean, not like she was biased or anything. Kong bows to no one. You can't have two alpha titans on Earth. And as soon as they start moving Kong, that's what brings it all together. So yeah, this was a case that by missing that movie, you miss certain keys that may or may not have made a difference. And that's why, because of how much time, what was that actress's name?
Millie Bobby Brown.
Yep. Because of the time she got in the last one, that's why seeing her in this one was kind of a, oh, cool. So to you, it might be more annoying, but to us, it's more of a continuation of what she went through the last one, which why it explains. There's also a thing where at the very end, the after credit scenes, as you're watching the headlines, as the Titans return to wherever they're going, they actually are healing the Earth. Hence her, how would you say, one-sided gushing that, oh, they're good, Titans good. You know, it all ties into the last movie. So, but I can understand if you just came into this wanting the main event, it's like going into a WrestleMania match and not knowing why the two opponents hate each other or why things are set up, which again is why in WrestleMania they set everything up so good. That said, what were your thoughts as you went into this? I mean, knowing what I told you, would have made a difference, or do you still think what is it? They should have really done a better job of setting you up for it.
All right. It started off, we got to see Kong's situation. We got caught up on Godzilla's situation. Here's the big thing. The whole quest of Kong going to the Hollow Earth had absolutely no effect on the movie at all, other than him getting an axe. And it felt like that entire sequence was a waste of my time to pad out the film so that it would be two hours long.
Okay. Again, that was a major plot point in the previous movie.
Right.
Everybody thought the Hollow Earth theory was bullshit until after Godzilla got his ass kicked in round, like you say, there's always three rounds. Round one by King Ghidorah. He goes back to where the Hollow Earth is, and this is where everybody's like, oh my God, he was right. The Hollow Earth, the guy who was a proponent of Hollow Earth was true. So this was more of a payoff from the last movie to explore more of that, whether it's something you cared about or not. That's individual taste, but I'm almost thinking you probably should have seen the last movie before jumping into it, which again,
or
shooter's process, you got to treat it like it's everybody's first.
Right.
Filmmakers
needed to make it more important why we were going on this detour.
Well, see, again, from someone who watched Godzilla, it was important.
Right.
Because this ties.
But in this
a
movie,
lot.
They didn't do that. They didn't
they
make
also,
it important.
Well,
they didn't
they
tell
might not
you
have needed
why.
To, because it was in the last movie. You know, how many times can you jump into the last episode of Harry Potter without watching the other ones?
Never seen.
Probably them. Not. No, I'm not saying that's not the point. The point is, I wouldn't advise you doing that because you miss a lot of the buildup. You know, this is really a four movie sequel or sequence going up to it. So, well, let's go with one you've seen. Could you have a friend enjoy the last of our the original one, Star Wars Empire Return? Would somebody have cared as much in Return of the Jedi not having seen the other two?
They might not have cared as much, but go back and watch that movie. They explain who everybody is. They explain why people need to do what they do. In Godzilla versus Kong, they didn't explain. They didn't explain why people were doing what they did.
I would disagree with your assessment.
That is a flaw of the writer.
Because you would have no idea who's this idiot that's tied up in carbonite. Why are they going for him? What planet are we on? There's so many questions you wouldn't know in Return of the Jedi if you hadn't seen the other two. So, again, it could be a flaw of the movie, but I think you're coming in on chapter four after skipping chapter three, which I don't know if you would ever do that in a book. Maybe you might. I don't know. We've never talked about reading stuff. So, again, for a first-time person who's like just wants the main event, but I knew this when I brought Chris on board with this because I made her watch the other three knowing you're not going to jump into the last one and get it, other than, of course, the main fight. Because they did – well, there was just a whole slew that when – in well, you saw it in Kong, you know. There were other Kongs. My question is always – and, again, I'm jumping a little bit ahead. How did the Kongs get from Hollow Earth to Skull Island? And why didn't they know how to get back? But again, if they ever decide to make a fifth movie, they got a lot of stuff they could cover.
The other problem I had with it, that the human beings weren't interesting.
I'll give you that. Same thing. They were built up in previous movies. They weren't. They didn't spend a lot of time building them up.
When we got into the Hollow Earth and characters started dying, it felt like generic
bad guys.
Generic explosions.
Yeah.
Like the evil business owner's daughter. Oh, they've turned on the people that we've been following. They didn't even give it time to resonate before King Kong killed him. It was like, oh, then Kong just grabs their ship and boom, they explode and die. It's the same problem we have with a lot of entertainment that doesn't work. If you're going to have a plot point, you have to let it resonate. You have to slow down and let these things resonate. Because if it's just plot point, explosion, plot point, explosion, yeah. Plot point, explosion. Nothing matters because, well, that plot point, it doesn't matter. You're not giving us any time to think about it. We're just moving on to the next thing. It's almost, to me, the movie seemed very much like, put everything we need to do down on an index card. Give it to a regular screenwriter who will then drop it into final draft. Boom, 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 boom. We hit all the index cards, run the end credits.
I almost wish you'd have seen Godzilla, King of the Monsters, before you jumped in on this.
I cared about Kong. I cared about the little girl who taught him sign language and her mom. I'm unsure if it was her mom or her guardian because they said early on that all of her people died. Yeah.
My guess would be guardian, because again, that was a case. That was something even my wife said, really? That's how they're going to explain? There's no, and they didn't really say what caused that. Was that a storm caused by King Ghidorah from the last movie, or was it just something that happened previously?
Yeah, I cared about them. None of the other characters resonated. I only knew Millie Bobby Brown because Howard Stern has an long-going bit about her agent, and she's on Stranger Things, and she's the hot young star right now. But there were so many times where I just shook my head. It's like, this is the most secure facility in all the world. And they just kind of sneak in through the vents.
Yeah. Really, her whole plot point could have been dropped out of the movie.
Yeah.
And it would have, again, this is something where I think I'll go with you on that, because I'm kind of like, you could have done a lot more with her, considering how integral she was, if I'm saying the word right, in the last movie. And it was more poignant when the bad guys finally got their just desserts. You know,
and how did we defeat the bad guy? Shorted out a circuit board.
And there really wasn't even, the bad guy at the end of Godzilla wasn't even in this one.
Yeah.
He somehow sold the head to this guy who, I gotta admit, turning him into Mechagodzilla was pretty sweet.
The big monster fights were fantastic.
It was kind of interesting.
Everything that they had advertised and more. That is like stuff I really
round
liked.
Round one went to Godzilla. Round two went to Kong. The final round, I would say, definitely would go to Godzilla, because Kong would have died without human intervention.
Yeah. The third round went to a bottle of whiskey. For me, I'm glad I didn't go see it in the theater, because I would have come out feeling very let down.
Well, you would have seen it for free.
Yeah.
Other than, like you said, the Massless Wonders. I think I mentioned when Gruber saw it,
Patino-like. He only see five times.
No, his problem was is he went opening day and there were like kids that wouldn't shut up, people on their phone. Yeah. There's a reason why Pat likes to go a week after, because he wants to enjoy the theater experience without everybody being idiots. Now, I enjoyed the living hell out of it. I got home the Friday night it was on. My daughter's boyfriend brought down his sound bar. We plugged it in. So we had decent sound. We paused it, which was something I really enjoy, because if we miss something, you can rewind it, which streaming sucks for rewinding. It's one reason I like DVDs a little better. And as it was done, I think everybody, you know, we really liked it. We liked the monster fights. I thought some of the human scenes were kind of weak. I understand why they need them, because first of all, they don't talk. Even though there was a Godzilla movie, if I recall, in the past, where Godzilla had subtitles. But you almost need that to that. What would you call it, Corey? Exposition?
Yep. Exposition.
Plot point in advancement, whatever. So the other thing I did not like, the only thing I didn't like was the ending. It was like, boom, this is the, okay, Kong drops his axe. Spoiler alert. Godzilla snorts and turns his back and leaves.
Even after we were told that they are genetically driven to destroy each other at the beginning of the movie.
Well, Titans can learn too. Plus Kong.
There can be only one.
Well, Kong dropped the axe. He bowed to Godzilla. Godzilla is king of the monsters. The last thing I would have liked to seen is maybe when Godzilla goes under Kong, pick up his axe, disappear down the hole. That would have been a better ending to me than, okay, he's back in Hollow Earth being happy. Because then you know, okay, they basically parted. So Kong is king of Under Earth or whatever they're going to call it, and Godzilla will surface to live another day. Assuming they're going to do a fifth one. I mean, I haven't heard hide nor hair. I haven't even heard how this thing did.
It's really hard to tell because, you know, yes, it's in movie theaters, but movie theaters aren't doing all that great. Yeah. Let me take a look here. It has grossed in the U.S. $86 million. Let's see if we've got a worldwide.
Which
international is $320 million. So it's made $406 million.
Yeah. My guess would be it would probably be double that if it wasn't pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think they count it as a hit. I don't know what – I haven't heard anything about streaming, if it increased the streaming, if it was the most streamed movie, or if they can even tell that.
I think what I read was that HBO Max had a bunch of new signups for last month, which is – or this month or whatever month it came out. They say that, you know, they got X number of new signups for HBO Max, which is basically all they're doing. It's okay, can we get people to sign up for this service? I give it a C. You know, big, empty blockbuster. The spectacle was great. The story didn't work for me at all. And I'm still going to say, no matter what, even if this is the fourth part, you need to establish why these things are happening. If, especially when they're saying you can come see this without seeing any other movie, this is Godzilla versus King Kong.
I don't know if they said that. I'm just giving you that bone because that is a good contention. I would say probably that's old school thinking, old cinematic thinking. The newer blockbusters now don't work that way. You know, you want to see the last Harry Potter movie? Well, hopefully you've seen the other ones so you know what's going on. I don't know if they necessarily care. It's like reading part six of a six-part comic book story. They might give you a little bone to keep you up to battle, but it's up to you to do it. I know you're pretty set in your reviews, but if you ever go watch Godzilla King of the Monster, which I don't know. Is that still on Netflix? All I know is I had to go to different ones to watch the movie. I don't think it's all on HBO Max at the moment. But if it is, watch that one. Because first of all, that one was fun. That was a good Donnybrook movie. And it really sets up the last movie. But if you watch it, see if there was enough plot point in that one to maybe negate some of the things that you're missing. Or maybe it won't. I don't know if you ever rewatch a movie and come back with a different conclusion. But that may be something, and we've talked about it in different media in the past. You know, the old Star Trek book line was very, and even the Star Wars was very tied into the fact that you had to have read a previous one to know what the hell's going on. And maybe that's something that moviegoers or movie makers are going to have to come to terms with. You know, either you got to see it or you don't.
Or if they're not going to explain it in the movie, Joe, you didn't watch the show Lost. But Lost always started with previously on Lost.
Although eventually you get so far into Lost, previous in the Lost doesn't mean anything.
Right, but it does kind of. If it's been a while since you've seen an episode, or the previous season ended and it's been 6 months since there's been a new episode, you've got it. Marvel has at the beginning of each book, here's who Spider-Man is. Here's where he is right now. And even back in the 70s, they would have up in the box above the splash page, Peter Parker was bitten by a radioactive spider. Blah, 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 didn't save his Uncle Ben. When Uncle Ben was killed by the criminal that he failed to stop, he learned life's most powerful lesson. With great power comes great responsibility, and he became the Amazing Spider-Man. The X-Men hunted him.
You've already bored half the movie audience. If you do that in front of every movie, you're going to bore half the movie audience.
So
how do you do that in
the Krulls in the Star Wars movies?
That would be that could work a little better. I don't know if you could do that with every movie, you know, without people, you're just ripping off Star Wars. But that may actually make sense. Because that was, like I said, I made sure Chris watched all the movies before the main event because This was the payoff for the other three movies. So, again, if you ever find yourself watching Godzilla King of the Monster, first of all, I'm curious what you think of it. And second, see if that makes watching this one any different. Because really, if you hadn't seen the first one, I don't care how great of actress Miley is, she could have been left out of it. Whereas in the Godzilla King of the Monsters, she was way too involved in the plot. Heck, her dad, they could have left him out of it. You know, the whole, oh, in a sea of millions in a city half destroyed, I happen, there's my dad, there's my daughter.
Yeah, that's another thing. The whole, you know, he didn't even know she was there. And they, oh, we have found each other.
Because I was thinking that was kind of cool. Like, what? You're here in Hong Kong? You know, because that was kind of an interesting moment, and it just fizzled.
Do you remember the Steven Spielberg War of the Worlds?
Never saw it, but I did see the ending of it.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, it looks like that Tom Cruise's family is dead, and he's, you know, the Martians have been defeated, and all of a sudden he shows up at this town, and oh my gosh, everybody's alive. Nobody we knew in the movie actually died.
Yeah.
But that's not here what we're here to talk about.
Well, you didn't tell me what you thought of Mechagodzilla.
Like I said, I thought all the fight scenes were awesome. I thought all the fight scenes were awesome. I even understood that King Ghidorah had taken over the Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
Because they
that one came kind of quick. I was expecting that, but I didn't. I did actually watch the whole fight scene, and it's about an hour long from when Kong comes out of the Hollow Earth to so unlike the Avengers, which is about 40 minutes, I think it's a 40-minute final fight scene in Endgame, this one I had to go about an hour back. I waited till Kong surfaced because I just wanted to watch the fight scene. Hang on a second, what'd you say, that you could short out an entire system by pouring soda on it? Hang on, I better move my soda over a bit. I am disappointed. I never did get Pepsi Peeps, by the way.
Yeah, me too. Let's see. They said that there have been discussions about a crossover between the MonsterVerse and the Pacific Rim franchise. Legendary CEO commented on possible sequels. We have a number of ideas for more movies, but nothing concrete. Hollywood Reporter stated that Legendary was quietly taking steps to stretch the series into one or more installments, negotiating to see with Son of Kong being one potential title. So,
well, they did kind of an interesting job, because you think about it, like I said, Godzilla's on the surface. They could leave Kong underground and never, he could never go surface again. If the whole world's hollow, he's got a whole world he can explore.
So, by the way, this is a comic book show.
It is?
And we've spent a half hour talking about Godzilla versus King Kong.
It was a damn good movie.
And I thought that, well, maybe we could review a few comics.
You are such a radical. Must be why I like doing this for you for 10 plus years.
Not as many as I had planned, by the way.
Well, I get, yeah, I, you know, and the thing was, is this is either an, probably closer to what I've been doing with my collection as I pare back, but I don't have a lot of like new stuff to review. Everything I'm reading now is stuff I've been reading for a while. Occasionally, like I think I mentioned, I read the first Iron Man, Big Iron at, what's his name? Cantwell, Cafu, and Darmada are doing. But most of the time, everything I have, it's either stuff I've read or it's a beginning of a miniseries. And I don't mind reading the first issue, but I really want to wait for the whole thing. That said, as you know, I mentioned that my daughter Dana dropped off a lot of graphic novels, and most of them I read or I don't have an interest in reading, or they were mine to begin with. But she had one that I was curious about ever since I read the $1 image first. I've got in my hands here Snot Girl, Volume 1, Green Hair Don't Care. This is done by Brian Lee O'Malley and Leslie Hung with Mickey Quinn and Murray Odomo. On the back cover, this is interesting because they have it broken down. Contemporary fantasy, romance, fashion, comedy, anxiety, and INFP, which I had no idea what it was until my wife described it to me. Isn't that like personality spectrum or something?
Yeah.
No clue what it is. I'd be curious to see what the heck I am. But it says from the creator of Scott Pilgrim, who is she? Lottie Peterson is a glamorous fashion blogger living her best life. At least that's what she wants you to think. The truth is her allergies are out of control. Hence the word snot girl. Her friends are terrible people. Her boyfriend traded her up for something younger. And she may or may not have killed somebody. It's the first volume of Snot Girl and things will never be the same. Now, I have kind of a dual review on this. First of all, my review of this book is definitely not for me. I think it's more for teenagers who text and blog and care about fashion and romance and all that other stuff I listed off before. I did plow through it. It was interesting enough. The main character, Lottie, really not a likable person. A bit narcissistic. Like she said, if you followed her on your blog, you'd think she's hip, she's cool. Same thing like if you're following, you know, two ex-comic retailers who have a podcast. You think they're hip, they're cool, they're in the know. But, you know, not really. The snot girl portion comes because when she finally meets someone she dubs cool girl, she's having a full-on allergy attack. Her eyes are puffy, she's crying, she's got snot coming out of her nose. As it goes on and on, I found myself reading it. And of course, wouldn't you know, by damn it, that first volume ends in a cliffhanger. And the first thing I did, of course, is I cursed out the universe and I ran right away to Atomic Avenue just to see how long this thing went on. Near as I can tell, it's been 13 issues. The last one came out in 2019. I don't know if... Or I'm sorry, 15 issues. I don't know if it ended or if it was COVID-ed. There's three graphic novels out. Like I said, I got the first one in my hand. Thank you, Image. It was only $10. The other two are 15 apiece. Other than how the cliffhanger ends, I gave this book to my daughter, Holly, and asked her what she thought of it, you know. And she enjoyed it. She thought it was pretty cool. I had a number of questions. First of all, are blogs even a thing? No. maybe back in 2016. Right now, I would suspect the hip thing would be Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok. I don't even know if Twitter pates the youngsters nowadays. So the blog thing is out. I don't know if there's a lot of OMFG, FYI, LOL, RLY, you know, almost that old code that popped up because, you know, you had to buy, you were charged per letter when you originally texted things and messaged that way. A lot of that's gone by the wayside, which is great for guys like me who don't use, you know, things like that. But there's a lot of that going on. The art. The story, again, it's hard to say I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, but again, it wasn't really for me. Holly thought she might have been a little older for her. Again, she's 21, but she was very interested in it. Real curious on how the cliffhanger ended. If I can find a book two or three cheap, I'll probably pick it up and visit it again. But this was kind of an interesting exercise in reading something that wasn't necessarily me being the target audience. If anything I said interests you on this, I would definitely buy. If you have a teenager, I don't know. I don't know if a teenager would care about blog things. I don't even know if this type of book would be interested in that. But it would be something you could probably give to your teenager and let her find out if she liked it. The characters in question are in their mid-20s. As for somebody my age, Corey, I'd be like, go find the image first. Read that first issue. See if it knocks you out. I mean, like I said, the art's interesting. But, you know, for me, if I ever do read two or three books, I would probably borrow it. What do you got up for grabs on your first one, Corey?
I've got an image book as well. It is called Home Number One, only one issue out so far. Jukio Anta is the writer, Anna, and I will butcher this name as if I'm Joe, Weisick, W-E-I-C-Z-C-Z-Y-K. Weisick. It starts telling the story of a woman and her small child making their way from Guatemala, where their lives have been threatened, to the U.S. When they left, they were, you know, they knew how to apply for asylum, but when they get to the U.S., the rules have changed because we have a different president. We see them being interviewed. We see how the Border Patrol has changed, how the Border Police have changed. We see the mother and the child separated, and we see the child go to one of the facilities that was used for children. And the book ends with a twist that will make you go, what the what? And I'm not going to tell you, because the twist comes out of nowhere. And then when you go back and read it, you go, oh, and I love when they do that. It's a lot like the first episode of the TV show, The Good Place, where, well, the first season of the show, The Good Place, where you think you're reading one kind of story, and then at the end you realize you're not. You're reading a very different kind of story. The art is reminds me a lot when you go to Target or you go to Walmart or you go to a bookstore, you see the young adult graphic novels. It's that very animation style. It actually feels very much like it was drawn by someone from Central America. It has a lot of that feel to it. And the thing that really grabbed me was about halfway through the book, I'm thinking, this is just depressing. I know this stuff from watching the news. I know this stuff from watching a documentary. And then when you get to the last three pages, that twist just makes you go, I need the next issue right now. Right now. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain that sense of, I need to know what's coming next. But the way it was done was so masterful that I have to think that the people involved know what they're doing. They know where they're going. And it's not going to be just one twist. They're going to keep us. They've set up a really cool situation. And I can't see it playing out the way that I would have done it, which is one of the best things. I love when I'm surprised by a book. And this book really surprised me. This is a buy. And this is one I'm going to be buying as comics, because I think the creators are doing it as a comic with a cliffhanger. So it makes it more engaging to read on a month-to-month basis. There are a lot of comics I much prefer reading as a graphic novel. There are very few where the creators use the fact that it's a serialized entertainment. Walking Dead did that. I always bought Walking Dead as a comic. Amazing Spider-Man still does that. I still buy Amazing Spider-Man as a comic. This is one I'm going to buy as a comic. Gets a big buy from me. Joe, what's your next book?
Let's see. The next one I got is Chariot. It's a new one from AWA. From the publisher, they put that the Chariot was a Cold War era secret government project to provide its star agent with a weapon unlike any other in the form of a supercharged muscle car. It sank into the ocean decades ago, and the agent along with it. Now a petty criminal looking to reform his life has stumbled upon the Chariot. He's about to find out that the agent's consciousness is still controlling it in this synthwave thriller. That pretty much sums up the first issue. Again, I know, obviously I bought it because if you go back into the preview show from a couple months ago, this is one that I recommended, 5-issue miniseries. As I'm reading it, it starts out, there's a car chase. You can almost see this as a movie. You know, they're shooting bullets at the car. They're bouncing off. However, the bad guys get the better of the car. It sinks to the bottom of the ocean and disappears. Now, the next scene we start out is there's a guy looking over a very, very, very sick child in a hospital bed. And you get the gist that it's his son. He's not with the mother anymore. He's got to do what he can, even if it means borrowing more money from whoever he borrowed money. And he's working at a junkyard where he runs into what we know as the Chariot. And he's basically been told, because of what he's doing, he gets paid by the pound for selling salvage. And the owner said if he finds something he likes, he can keep it if he could fix it. Well, he's pretty sure he can fix Chariot. And he opens the hood and goes, I think. It goes on. The bad guys show up. And the very last page is the hook shot. I kind of enjoyed this. I think AWA is set up. I think this could almost be a pitch for like either a TV show or a movie or something. But I enjoyed it a lot. It's written by Brian Hill, art by Priscilla Petratis. Great art. Easy to follow what's going on. The faces don't change like crazy from page to page, so I never have to go back to figure out who's talking, who's writing it. It's only the first issue. I'm not as crazy to get to the second issue as Corey was with his, but it is definitely one, when I get all five together, it'll be fun to read to see where they're going. It's interesting because I know the way they have this ended is one of those, I can't wait for number two, but it doesn't, you know, I'm happy knowing it's going to come, it's coming, that I'll, once I get all five issues together, I can just sit back and read them. It's supposed to be monthly. AWA is really good with monthly comics. Like I said, I got issue one in my box today. I went with the variation A. Number one's got two variations. I decided to go with the variant cover by Mike Diodato Jr. No variant, no difference in price. It was an orderable variant. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this ends up. And like I said, I'll probably end up revisiting it once I get all five issues together and seeing did it pan out really well, because so far it's got my interest and I don't regret buying it. Corey?
The next book I have, DC is doing a whole bunch of number ones. I am not going to be able to review all of them, but I am going to be reviewing a few. And the next one I am reviewing.
I would say, when you get a chance, maybe do a David Watkins type review. David was always awesome with POS. Definitely worth reading. Why did I bother? Can you believe they killed a tree for this? And those were the good ones. So maybe in the future, because I got to tell you, as you know, I pretty much checked out of DC, although I'm slowly coming back. But when you talk about the number ones, I listen, because that will decide whether or not I go out of my way to pick them up. No pressure. But I'm
no
just
pressure.
Back and, well, see what you read.
No pressure. We have a new Robin number one and a new Robin in this number one. This is Josh Williamson and Greb Melkinoff, whose work I've never seen before as the artist. We start off, Batman is unable to find Damian Wayne, who is the new Robin. We get a check-in of all of the Batman characters in Gotham City to kind of let us know what the new status quo is. So they take a few pages to set the stage. We then see that Robin is trying out for this this major fighting tournament on Lazarus Island, where you have to defeat a major martial artist in order to get a token so that you can go to this once every 100 years tournament. And through this, we see a lot of characters that we haven't seen in a long time. We see King Snake. We see Lady Shiva. We see a lot of the Batman villains who just kind of were shunted to the side since the New 52. Almost as if, okay, we're reintroducing these characters. We're letting you know that these characters are still around. We're setting up a status quo for them. Robin then goes to the island, and it is set up as if you've read the story 1,000 times. You've seen the story 1,000 times. If you've seen Enter the Dragon, if you've seen the original Mortal Kombat, if you've seen most martial arts movies, if you've read about martial arts, you know, those martial arts men's adventure novels from the 70s and 80s, that's the setup. The thing is that makes it work. One of the problems that I've had with Damian Wayne is that Grant Morrison gave him such a strong characterization. No one has done anything other than that. They've made him the snotty, arrogant brat. And that's it. That's all we know about him. Even in the series they did of the Super Sons, which is him and Superman's kid before he got all growed up by Brian Bendis. It was Robin is your arrogant know-it-all who's better than everybody. Well, now we get a little more of his character. We get a little more behind the mask. They're building a character because he's such a one-note character. You couldn't have a series of that character and be engaged for very long. So they add to the character. They make him more interesting. They set him in this place where we can get to know him outside of the Bat family, outside of Gotham City. And when I remember the original Robin series by Chuck Dixon, it was when he took him away from being Batman's sidekick that the character finally got interesting, got his own supporting cast, etc., etc. This is doing the same thing, sort of setting up Robin to have his own series. It also has a good cliffhanger that I'm not going to spoil, but it's one of the one of the things that I like lately in a lot of comics is they're giving a good cliffhanger. It's not a twist, but it's a really good cliffhanger. I'm excited to see where this goes. I was very impressed with Greg Melkinoff's art. I've never seen it before. It had a sense of the characters being big. Kind of like that, I talk about Brian Hitch draws characters in a way that they seem larger than life. They seem big. His characters seem larger than life, except he draws Robin as a young teenager. And before you go, well, duh, most comic book artists, when they draw a teenager, they just draw a slightly shorter grown-up. Teenagers look different. They're ganglier. They're still growing. He looks smaller. He looks as if he's, you know, he looks 14. He looks like a 14-year-old kid. And it actually helps the story a lot. But it also puts him in contrast to the larger-than-life characters, which makes him more of an underdog, which works for this story because, again, we're breaking down that he's the arrogant know-it-all who can beat everybody. Really good first issue. I like where they're going. And there's purpose to both the story and the art to build a series rather than just tell a story. So this, again, gets a buy. Joe, what's your next book? And this will be our last round, by the way.
Let's see. I'll let you decide, Corey. You want to hear Grant Morrison's Proctor Valley Road or number one Nonstop Spider-Man?
Nonstop Spider-Man.
Good choice, because Proctor Valley Road, while it's Grant Morrison and it's good, it's very much a setup issue. The twist doesn't happen till the end, and really, as I was reading it, I was a little bit bored, but it's a horror movie, and you gotta, you know, how long does it take in a horror movie before everybody realizes they're in a horror movie? Nonstop Spider-Man, let's see, who done do it? I suppose now they don't put the credits in the beginning, I'm going to have to dig for them.
I believe it is Joe Harris and Chris Bacalo.
Yep, Big Brain Play Chapter 1. Now, I read this, and I was kind of like, then I realized, wait a minute, I get what they're doing now, and I should have remembered it. The problem was I ordered this book so damn long ago, and it finally got here. Essentially, what they're doing Speed, the movie, in comic book form. What they're doing is everything's happening sequentially in time. It's one of those things where I always – one of the comic book cliches growing up in the 70s was Spider-Man's like, how am I ever going to find this person in time? And then they break away to the bad guy. And right before he cacks the hapless victim, Spider-Man comes crashing through the window just in time. Somehow he found him in time. Very cliche. Well, in Spider-Man, we're with Spider-Man the entire time. We see his thought processes. We see him moving fast. You know, you forget, in the original Spider-Man, Ditko showed just how fast Spider-Man thinks and moves in a, what was it, 11 seconds or something? And he totally, it was an amazing sequence that Ditko did. They're pretty much doing this, and you know that by the time you open up to the second page, because, see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 panels with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28 word boxes as Spider-Man is falling 13 stories to the ground. Oh, and by the way, by the time you get to the other side of the page, he's two stories from the ground. Going back, I had to reread it because when I first read it, I was kind of like, what? And then I had to go back and go, okay, I forgot the premise of the book. Knowing the premise of the book, this was a lot of fun. The art was spectacular. They're kind of doing a Batman thing where it's like everything's tilted a little bit. Because none of the columns sit, but it also pays off because you remember this is all happening very fast, very much in sequence. There's a few time drops, like you go back 2 hours ago, so you got to know why it's interesting. But it's very clear when you pop back 1 hour ago and now you're back to the now. And it's only part one. I don't know how many parts are in the first issue. I don't know. Is this a mini series or is this going to be an ongoing?
I am unsure because it was solicited over a year ago.
Yeah.
And then it was resolicited this year. And I thought it was a one shot, but they haven't said, you know, this many issues. So I don't know if it's an ongoing or if it's, we don't know how long it's going to go, but it's going to go as long as it's going to go. But they have not said that it has an end date.
Let's see. Well, there's about 500 different variants you can choose. I don't think issue two is out yet. They have four listed, pre-listed in Atomic Avenue, but that doesn't mean it's a four-issue miniseries. I recommend this. This was a lot of fun. I got a variant cover. I don't even know what variant cover I got it, but you should be able to find it. Actually, there was a die-cut cover. I might have to go look for that. That looks like kind of fun. Alex Ross did a variant cover, Adam Kuber, Larry Lieber. It looks like they just pulled out everybody. And there was a launch party. So if you can't find it at your friendly neighborhood comic shop, you should be able to go find it right online because there's 101 variants. But it's a different type of Spider-Man. It's a good – I'm digging the current Spider-Man. That was actually in my review pile because there's a new creative team, a new era, a new job, blah, 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 new costume. But if you're not reading any other Spider-Man, you might want to check this one out because it does seem pretty fun, and I've enjoyed the first issue. And I don't – it's pretty intense. I don't know if reading it all at once would be fun, but it would make a really, really cool movie. You know, although I don't know, can you do that nonstop for 2 hours without a breather? What you got for our last? Oh, this one, by the way, is definitely a buy. What you got, Corey?
I'm going to add one thing to that. I read it as well, and the page layout does not work for digital. Because there are a lot of two-page spreads where you've got a row, and it's kind of diagonal, scratching across the page. So when you lay it out as a comic, it's all cool. But when you digital, you know, with it's a two-page spread, it shrinks to fit the screen. So all of a sudden, it's half size. So you have to expand it, and then it's okay. I'm going to read here, and then I have to go over to this page, and then I have to come back to this page, and then go back and forth and back and forth. And that made it really choppy. So there are some comics that just don't work digitally. And this one to me did not work digitally. This is one that you will want to have a physical copy of because Bacalo uses that page layout to really steamroll you through the pages.
That's a good way of saying it.
Thinking the way I am, where it's, you know, you've got that row of panels that goes all the way across two pages at kind of a slant. He uses that a lot. It really works in a print comic, but man, gave me a headache as a digital. The last comic that I'm going to review is another number one, although it is a mini series from Image, The Old Guard, Tales Through Time. The Old Guard is a series by Greg Rucka, which is about a group of people who have found out that they are immortal. And they have banded together. And of course, because it's Greg Rucka, they're mercenaries and soldiers and things like that so that there's action. There was a movie on Netflix for Old Guard. Greg Rucka wrote the two stories in this first issue. But from the next issue blurbs and the solicitations, it looks like he's going to be handing it off. So these are short stories about some of the characters from Old Guard, either currently or a story about their past. The first one is a story that, while I get what he was trying to do, it's this the plot device has been used so many times, it felt very hackneyed and very cliched. The lead character has an axe, and she says that the axe was given to her either by her tribal chief or her mother. It was so long ago, she can't remember. And what it is, she was given an axe 10,000 years ago, and over time she's replaced bits and pieces of it and improved bits and pieces of it. So it's not the same axe, except in her mind it is. And it's a very old philosophical thing of how much do you replace on an item before it's no longer the original item? As a story device, I thought it was okay to kind of show her moving through the years. But the problem is so many people have used that device that it felt a little hackneyed and cliched. The second story was about a gay couple in pre-Hitler Germany as the Nazis are coming to power. If you've seen Cabaret or know much about the history, before Hitler came to power, Germany was very much very artist-driven, very artist-friendly. The society had no problem with gay couples. They had no problem with that. But as Hitler came to power, he campaigned very much on, we're going to put the church back at the center of the government, and gay people became just as decadent and wrong as Jews. So this is about that era of history. And it was an okay short story. It needed a little more room to breathe, but I can see why he did it as a short story in this, because it wouldn't fit in any of the major narratives. So I'm gonna give this a borrow. I was very disappointed in the first story. Greg Rucka can do much better than this. The second story was okay, but this is very much for people who read the Old Guard miniseries and just, they want more. background on the characters. It doesn't feed into the main narrative. You can read it or not, and it's not going to affect any of the other Old Guard stories. And that's why I give it a borrow. I like anthology books. I like to support anthology books. But this one's one that I could take or leave. You know what I can't take or leave, Joe?
Oh, just anybody offering you a free piece of pie.
And believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can just email me at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks! The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast, but on this same feed, K-R-A-Y-Z-C-O-M-I-X, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus, we'll do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And you know what hasn't been revamped, Joe?
Number two pencils?
Your favorite part of the show. No, not where you drink a bunch of Fireball and then set your breath on fire so you can melt candles. No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Well, have you heard of Bloyin 36?
No.
That's B-L-O-U-I-N 36? Well, he happens to be one of our listeners who is taking me up on my offer.
Ooh.
He, too, sells on eBay. So if you go to his site and check him out, obviously you're on eBay. And then, again, it's I'll spell it, B-L-O-U-I-N 36. Search for him. And then you can, if you find his feedback, you can just jump up and see what kind of goodies he has for sale. Different stuff, different things. And, of course, I don't know if he's offering deals to listeners, but he does have best offers up. So if you see something you're really big on, send him a note and say, hey, I heard it on Crazy Comics that you're selling on eBay. So, again, I'll make that offer to anybody else. If you got some, just send me a quick line, and we'll spread the word here. Because, I mean, there are weeks like this week where I didn't sell a lot. Sold a lot of high-buck items, but nothing too spectacular. Did sell the first of Dana's graphic novels that she brought in. She had a copy of Journey into Mystery Complete Collection Volume 1. This was, Journey into Mystery, of course, is the original 1952 where Thor appeared. But this is a renumbering where it started up, and I think it started out with Thor, and then, of course, Loki was turned into a kid. And, of course, the question is, will he be Asgard's savior? It collects Journey into Mystery 622 to 636, including the annoying point one issue from 626. And I didn't read these when they came out. I was tempted to keep this and read it, but you know, I'm trying to sell these for Dana and I didn't keep it. Did you read this series at all, Corey, when it came out?
I did not. I've got it in a collected edition, and it's basically on the ever growing pile to be read.
Yeah, there's two volumes. The volume one is out of print and crazy priced. I sold the one I had at cover price, so I think that's what Dana paid for it. The other one, volume two, is pretty cheap. Probably going to go out of print. It's not an epic line, so there's no guarantee complete collections stay in print. Sold another set of Dark Crossings. That's the Witchblade Darkness Tomb Raider 2 comic crossover from Image way back from 2000. I sold a Star Wars number one, the Jax Humorous Party variant cover. That's the one where he's trying to get through the door. Hello, anybody? I can hear you breathing. And everybody's on the other side as they're hushing Darth Vader because he's, you know, going. Corey, you must have read the Impossible Man Summer Vacation Spectaculars when they came out in 1990, 1991.
Not only that, they are one of the books that I purchased when we went on our one of our geeking runs, because it's like, oh, cool. This is basically it's a nice, big, thick comic full of fun stuff for 50 cents. 50 cents.
Yeah, which were $2 when they first come out. And I had a run and I put them both together, packaged together and sold it. Of course, it's basically summer vacation with Impy, his wife, and his 4,682 children. And they, since all 4,682 is missing, and Impy figures he goes to Earth. So I don't know why they didn't continue this. They did one summer of 90, one of 91. I would have continued buying it. It was just a lot of fun. Different creators, different artists writing stuff in there. There's a book, a two-issue series called Gold Key Champion from 1978, which essentially was two issues, probably in the last gasp of Gold Key comics. One was, the number one was Space Family Robinson, which had said Gold Key Champion, and then in big letters, Lost in Space, even though it was the Space Family Robinson.
I should dig up, because there was an agreement between Gold Key and Irwin Allen on that, because they had already used the Space Family Robinson Lost in Space thing when Irwin Allen did his Lost in Space. And even as a kid, you would pick it up and go, oh, it's Lost in Space. And then you'd read it, and it was nothing like it.
Yeah.
But there was some sort of agreement between the two. Mark Evanier wrote about it years and years ago. So I need to look that up, because it was really interesting how basically Irwin Allen came to him and said, you're already doing an adaptation of my TV show, and I'm not getting paid for it. And they were like, well, we started ours 3-4 years before you started your TV show. Maybe you should be paying us.
And a rare agreement where they said, well, let's not sue each other. Let's just agree to go on. If you can find these, the number one in mint is about 30. The second one was a Mighty Samson, which reprinted from Mighty Samson number 9, one story and then another one from Mighty Samson number one, which was a series. So there's only two issues of this series. Again, I wonder how in 1978 these comics sold, because there was only two issues. They just, you know, again, was it just something Gold Key was like, we need to put something out. Let's reprint this. Cover price was 50 cents. I wish I was more aware. There was no way in Hell's Bells I would have bought either of these two off the newsstand, assuming I even saw them in a comic book shop. I should ask Greg Ketter if he ever carried comics like these, because, boy, I just remember going into a store and there was DC, there was Marvel. And then when that was Greg's first store, Twin City Comics. And then, of course, when I went into St. Paul Comic, he was more hip on, well, here's First Comics, here's Pacific Comics. And by that time, Pat and I were already buying things through previews. So anytime something new like that would come up, we were on top of that. But, boy, some of these Gold Key ones, first of all, they're rare and hard to find, even in great shape. But I just don't get the selling plan for these. I do understand IDW's plan for Transformers, because this was a series called Drift. Basically, in 2010, there was basically the storyline was, what was it that caused one of the Decepticons' most ruthless soldiers to turn his back on them? And what ancient secret lies hidden deep within an alien planet? All this and more as the origin of the newest Autobot, Drift, is finally revealed. No idea if this was a toy. Drift was a 4-issue series, lots of variants, of course. There was a couple tie-ins with it. Again, I wasn't reading Transformers at this time, but I had the variant cover. It was one of those RI covers, retail incentive covers, and ended up selling it. And the guy who bought it for me, guess what he did, Corey?
He gave you money.
But before that, do you think he paid $20 for this thing?
No, he made an offer.
Exactly. And you can too. And more importantly, even if it's on something that I don't have, the buy it now, ready to go, like the buddy I mentioned, Bolden 36 in the beginning, you send me a note. Tell me you listen to this here podcast. And more than likely, if I don't agree, I might even give you a better deal. Or I might give you a copy of Worldwide News, the strip that Corey Strode and Daniel Stitch Moore did. Or maybe I'll just give you a key to the Strode compound. Not as much fun since Corey's there 24/7, but
Pretty much, yeah.
It's not as much fun. But if you show up with pie and comics, you guys could probably sit down and play some games together. Holy cow, you gotta stay outside. Okay, yeah, I gotta stay outside. But he'll throw a Wi-Fi remote out to you. Even as we sit here, I just sold another one, Corey. Ooh. I sold Project Superpowers Volume 1 hardcover.
Ooh.
Yeah. And let's see, this baby was originally priced. Let's see if I can find it. Holy cow, $29.99. Guess what I sold it for?
$20.
Less.
$15.
Less.
$1.95.
Close, $9.99 free shipping. Ooh. Someone got a deal. And you can too. As I always say, K-R-A-Y-Z, crazy, come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I list all the dead bodies and boobs and deep kung fu and beheadings in a cheap 80s horror movie. That's Joe Bob Briggs' thing.
You mean I got my Scarlet Witch costume for nothing?
No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I regret the error. Spring Fling Comic Book Show is coming up this May 15th, Saturday, May 15th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. $5 admission per person. All the proceeds from Spring Fling Comic Book Show will go toward running the MSP Fall Con. As you know, due to COVID's, the last couple shows from MCBA, MCBF, whatever you want to call them, were canceled. This is the first show they're doing since the COVID started, and they're going to feature local artists and creators, local comic book vendors, and it's not at the fairgrounds. It's going to be at the Mermaid Entertainment and Events Center. in Mounds View, Minnesota. 2200 Mounds View Boulevard. It'll be in the Coral Bay Event Room. Free parking. There will be state-mandated COVID guidelines will be followed and enforced. And people are excited as all get out to do this. I apologize for it because normally the MCBA sends us a note saying, hey, this is coming up. But they've been just going crazy, I think, trying to figure out what's going on. So it's duly noted. We mentioned it on this here podcast. And me personally, I'm freaking because I had that weekend off. Because, as you know, the way it works, I have to bid a week in advance. I'm sorry, a year in advance for everything I want off. And so I bid for this weekend off. I only had one of 3 days off, which I kind of figured I need. Normally, we thought it would be a two-day spring concert. You have Thursday set up, Friday set up, Saturday, Sunday. I was able to get all but one day off. So I was just waiting on that. And then when it became apparent there was no spring con going on, I just canceled the whole leave. And now it's like, oh, they are doing a comic book show. So I have no idea if I'm going to actually get to go to this show or not. Regardless, go. Give them the $5. And if you've got something you're interested in donating to the charity booth, the guys will be there to take it and get it to me. I say this every year. You know, we do the charity booth, something Corey helped me start years ago, and my family's taken over. And I haven't been really picking up anything during the COVID years. Usually I'm busy scoping the garage sales and the clearance racks and pimping people to, if you got something you want to donate. I've had several listeners donate boxes of comics, and I really don't care what it is. You know, if you've got something that you just don't want, well, yeah, you got a mint copy of the original Action number one and you don't feel like getting a couple $1 billion for it. Yeah, I'll take it and do something with it at the charity booth. If not, you know, if you got a box of Drek that you were thinking of getting $5 for at the half price bookstores or wherever, no, donate them to the charity booth and you can take a full tax write off. I'll get you the tax form. And by full tax write off, I mean pretty much what you paid for. And it's up to you with your local tax, whatever your tax situation is. But all I know is, you know, I've been donating stuff left over from my shops for years. So anyways, I'll mention it the next couple of shops, shows, whatever. I ordered wrong this month. I hate it when I do that. I was all excited. You heard me talk about it on the preview episodes. Getting the Epic Collection of Doctor Strange, the first run that Steve Ditko and Stan Lee did. Not realizing, sitting on the shelf behind me less than 4 feet, is the Omnibus.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. And, of course, by the time I realized that it was too late, you usually go in and edit your orders. And had I done that, I would have canceled that and ordered something else. So guess what will be going to the eBays when it gets here? Talk to me in 2 months. As far as the COVIDs go, I'm happy to report only one of the two kids actually has the COVIDs. He's recovering nicely.
The Rona.
I did not get it. I actually went down and did a rapid test, which consists of the Corey, did you ever do the original COVID test where they stick the thing into your brain and see if it comes out your ear?
No, I did not have to do that.
Oh, I did that. I had to do that. I had to do the newer one where it just swipes kind of on the outer side of your nose. And then they do a pinprick. And the pinprick one is the one that tells you if you have the antibodies, saying if you're fighting it or if you had it. And mine came up no across the board, which was really cool. The rapid tests are very expensive. You know, most of the tests you can go do, either the nose swab or the spit tests, are free because the government's paying for them. Rapid tests are not. They're $400. They are paid for by most insurance companies, or you pay for it out of pocket. I know Holly did it originally because her job picked it up. They wanted her so badly because everybody's out with COVID. They said, you go do it, and if you're clear, come in. And I did it just because it was covered, because there was no way in hell I was going to go to work with it. I remember when we found out we had it, and I've already had the vaccination, but I called work and I told them, okay, I've been vaccinated. I really haven't had contact with the person who brought it into the house. Again, it was brought in from outside the house. That person stayed upstairs with the kids, maybe used the bathroom, maybe used the kitchen. Saw them in passing, but I didn't really see them. I'm feeling fine. I had the regular test, came up negative. But then when one of my kids got it, and yeah, it's my daughter's boyfriend, but, you know, they're my kids. That's when I did the rapid test. And unfortunately, I'm free. I never had it. And with the vaccine, hopefully never will. The only other health thing today, I went yesterday and got my second crown on my back of my tooth. Did not go as smoothly as the first one. And it feels a little sensitive. I've been slowly drinking. You know, I like cold beverages. And, of course, if it gets on that side of the mouth, it's like, whoa, that's cold, baby. Of course, it's still, you know, gums are pretty swollen. So I wish I could say that would be the last of that line, but you know something else going to happen. Yeah, that's enough. What else, Corey? What you freaking on?
Well, Friday, I was doing an evening shift at the group home. I was supposed to be there till 8:30. Because last week they needed me from 6 to 8:30 because the house that I'm currently working in, the clients pretty much go to bed early. They're all in bed, done, asleep by 8 o'clock. So I got there. I spent time with the clients. I turned the TV from the Lifetime Movie Network, which all the staff seemed to watch for some terrible reason, to sports for the client who really likes sports, and old sitcoms for the client who just likes to watch Andy Griffith and things like that. And 8 o'clock, I put the last client to bed, and I come out, and the staff says to me, "I'm leaving." And leaves. And I looked at the schedule, and she was supposed to be there till 10. And I thought, oh, she must have somebody who's going to come in at 8:30. And 8:30 came, and nobody came in. 9 o'clock came, and nobody came in. 9:30 came, and nobody came in. 10 o'clock, the overnight staff, who was supposed to be working, came in. And I thought, this is really weird that I was just kind of left. Hour and a half, nobody asked me if I could stay late. Nobody said, "Corey, we're changing the schedule." There was no schedule change on the actual schedule itself. So I went home, slept, came back, did my shift on Saturday afternoon, went home and had my Saturday night off. And then Sunday, I'm finishing up mixing the podcast and doing other stuff. And I decide that I'm a little peeved about the fact that I kind of got left there. And it's not the first time staff have done stuff like that. So I tossed that staff directly under the bus. Emailed my supervisor and said, "You know, next time when I'm going to be when I'm going to be asked to stay an extra couple hours, please let me know ahead of time." I didn't have any plans Friday night, but there have been times when staff have done this in the past, and it's really caused a problem, including the fact that about a month ago, it made it so I could not get my COVID vaccination. I got the email back today. Supervisor seemed very surprised that this had happened because she said, "Oh, well, we were told that you said that you could handle the rest of the shift," when she called and asked if she could leave early. So just kind of freaking about the fact that the staff tried throwing me under the bus. I dodged and tossed her under instead. Joe, what you geeking on?
I had all sorts of things I was going to geek on, but there's only one thing I'm really geeking on. You know, we're big on Kickstarter. Corey, you like the show The Prisoner?
Yes, I do. And I think I emailed you this, didn't I?
I don't know. I think you did, and then it re-popped up because I'm big on it. They're offering the Prisoner Retro Style action figures. Retro style means they're kind of in the way Corey and I grew up with action figures, you know, maybe 4 or 5 inches tall and a small blister pack with a large window. Not these huge McFarlane-inspired plastic statues that have, well, I could say the old ones only had like maybe 4 points of articulation, you know, hips and arms, but they look cool. So Wandering Planet Toys is doing a bunch of these number 6 prisoner toys with Patrick McGoohan's face on them. It's the first time I'm aware of that toys have been licensed from this property. And don't tell anybody. I went degree absolute. I bought the entire effing show. And I couldn't decide. I mean, all these figures are so cool. I may actually buy another one just because I want to open one. But just the fact that I'm going to get them. The thing has been fully funded. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to get them. I don't even care about the T-shirts and all that jazz. I just want all the figures. And I'm looking forward to getting them. They probably won't ship till Lord knows when. But it is fully funded. They got 28 days to go. How long? What are Kickstarters? 30 days? Or can you set it up longer?
They could be longer or shorter. I know the Mystery Science Theater 3000 one is 30 days.
So it's 28 days to go. By the time the podcast drops, it'll be 21 days to go. Just look for Prisoner Retro Style action figures if you want to jump on board. They're pretty sweet. I mean, even if you just want to buy one or two, I kind of think this is kind of the wave of the future for toys like this because, again, it'd be nice if they were to offer these, like, here's a wholesale pack for if you're a retailer. Oh, wow. What is that? Number 6, Arrival Exclusive? Oh, never mind. I missed. I was trying to see if the Degree Absolutes are still available, but maybe not. I don't see it on the board. Anyways, they're there. Go check them out. They're really cool. Even get the Rover if you want. Roar. I can't do a Rover noise. Corey, what you geeking on?
I have all sorts of things I am geeking on. Let's do the non-comic stuff first. I talked about it a little earlier. I am not needed as much at the group home. Currently, they have a bunch of staff working. I don't have any sleep shifts. They did try to strong arm me into doing some awake overnights. And I said that I really, with my office job, I can't do that turnaround anymore. I just can't. The last time I had two sleep shifts that were supposed to be sleep, but they turned out not being sleep. And by Monday morning, I still wasn't on a regular schedule. So I'm really only working like maybe one evening a week and then one weekend shift a week. I have my Sundays completely off. I have my Saturday nights off for the foreseeable future. And the first couple times that happens, you're kind of, oh my gosh, this is so cool. What do I do? There's so many things to do on a Saturday night. Oh my God. Well, there's nothing really to go out and do. So now Saturday nights are movie nights. Sunday is, oh my God, I can get stuff done. And it's really nice to have kind of time to not be super busy all the time. The group home has really been needing me for about the last year. And the fact that they have enough staff is a nice pause. I also want to remind everybody, this never lasts. So I imagine either when staff start moving on or the staff who left early, if they did that once, they're going to do it more than once. So usually what happens is they get all hired up and then summer comes and boy, there's a lot of extra shifts. So I'm not looking forward to that part of it, but I am enjoying the fact that there's kind of a pause. Also, I did enjoy the fact that Godzilla vs. Kong just came out two, three weeks ago. I was able to bring it up on my Roku TV, watch it in my own house. I didn't have to go hang out with the heathens, the mouth breathers, the non-maskers, the festering bags of disease that are out in the world. I could watch it here in my own house. I could make my own kettle corn. I could drink my own soda and really enjoy it. And if I do watch it again, I am going to fast forward through the entire Hollow Earth thing because cool ideas that they didn't do anything with. The last thing that's non-comic related is that they are opening up vaccinations. 3 weeks ago, when I wasn't able to go to that, when I tried to reschedule, and there was nothing. And I've been going to the websites, nothing, nothing. And I was getting to the point where if you're not able to get a vaccination, the first thing to do, look at the reddest counties in your state and try to get an appointment there, because no one's getting a vaccination in those red counties. They have appointments. And I was willing to drive an hour or so to get my appointment. But no, somehow Minnesota's gotten a whole bunch more. So they actually have appointments available. So I have signed up for one this Saturday. And don't know if I'm getting the Johnson & Johnson or the other one. But I'm sure I'll find out when I'm there. So I'm finally going to be vaccinated. Does this mean I'm going to go back to my office and not work at home? Hell no. Does this mean I'm going to go out and hang out with the English? No. Hell no. I'm staying in the house. You're all festering bags of disease. Comic-wise.
I'm not.
Comic-wise. I have all of the trade paperbacks of the King Conan series. Marvel did the King Conan series in the I think it started in like 79 and lasted until 89 because it only came out rarely. There were 59 issues, 8 trade paperbacks. And I finally have, I'm going to sit and read these. And the first one is the first 5 issues, which is all Roy Thomas, John Buscema, adapting the stories after Conan has become King of Aqualia. Oh my God, this stuff is so good. I often talk about how John Buscema is one of my favorite artists, but you can tell when he actually gives a shit. Because if it's a superhero book, I'm not going to say he phones it in, but his stuff is kind of at a B level. When he would do Conan, when he would do Thor, when he would do stuff where he didn't have to draw cars and buildings, he would kick it up to an A level. And this is, you know, this is prime Conan. And he and Ernie Chan just knock it out of the park on the art. Roy Thomas is adapting stories by Robert E. Howard, Lynn Carter, and his adaptations are fantastic in that he's able to turn these stories into comics rather than doing just an adaptation. Absolutely loving the stuff. I know Marvel will probably reprint it at some point or another, but if you can get those trade paperbacks from Dark Horse, do it. It's Conan stuff that didn't sell as well as the regular Conan book because it was double-sized. So the sales were never as good, but man, it's John Buscema just absolutely loved this stuff, and it's so easy to tell. He doesn't use any of his stock poses. He doesn't use any of the, you know, the stock stuff. You can tell he really cared about this, and it really shows in the art. And the other thing that I am geeking on over at DC, one of the things I'm noticing about these new number ones, unlike the new 52, they've got new artists who are drawing in their own style. One of my big problems with the new 52 was that everybody was drawing like it was the 90s. That, you know, the tons of thin lines on everything. Everything inked with a pen. Very much the Jim Lee style of, you know, lots of lines everywhere. And the thing I'm liking about this Infinite Frontier, the artists seem to be drawing in their own style. Each book looks different. And it's such a change from the new 52 where everything looked the same. Everything looked like it had been laid out in 1995. The artists, some of them are using big panels. Some of them are using different perspectives. Some of them are drawing in almost an anime style. Some of them are drawing in a sort of the Alex Raymond realistic style. Some of them are drawing in the Brian Hitch style. It's such a joy to see DC reopen up so that the art looks different book to book. when everything looked the same under the new 52, it's one of the reasons I lost interest, because if you don't like that art style, that's 52 books you're not going to buy. This seems much more individualized, so it feels like that the artist actually has some input on things, and it's making the books more visually interesting. Even as a kid, Marvel kind of had a house style, with John Buscema being the driver in the 70s when I started reading, but you had different artist styles. You had Frank Robbins, you had Sal Buscema, you had George Perez, you had John Romita, you had George Tuska, you had Don Heck, you had all these different styles, and as a kid, it was like you could tell which artist was drawing what, to the point where after like 3 or 4 years of reading comics, I didn't need the credits. I could go, oh yeah, that's John Buscema being inked by Ernie Chan, or that's John Buscema being inked by Tom Palmer. And DC's getting back to that. I don't know where they've pulled a lot of these new artists from. By a lot of the names, it looks like they're European. But I really like the fact that they're opening up the art style and making the books much more visually interesting, especially when Future State, everything looked like the 80s threw up on it. So a lot of the number ones I've read have made me interested, and it would be very cool if DC was able to make me interested in their universe again. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on for 40 minutes about King Kong and then an hour about comics.
Wow, you must be special.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
I'll now proceed to pleasure myself with this fish. Corey, hit my music.
You're just going to slap yourself with the fish, aren't you?
I love Swedish fish.
Done, bitches!